Welcome to a special edition of Teaching Restored, where we get to talk about how to teach the gospel of Jesus Christ. But today, we're doing it in a new way. We're doing it in the same old way. We're doing a podcast, we're doing the video, we've got all that. But what we're talking about and how we're talking about this is going to be very different. Because yeah. A lot of people, this isn't the traditional, here's what you can do in Sunday school or in seminary or whatever this is. This is very, very different, but it's also, it's teaching the gospel, but in a way we wouldn't typically think of teaching the gospel. So Julie, I have a question for you.
Okay, talk to me.
What, have you ever been asked a really awkward question about the temple?
Yes, totally. Yes.
Like what?
Yes.
Can you think of an example?
Yeah, the most awkward ones are usually related to garments, honestly.
Okay.
Because people are like talking to you about your underwear that they think is crazy. And it's usually, unfortunately, there's not usually those questions aren't usually coming in the context of a more spiritual discussion.
Sure.
They're usually kind of a little bit out of the blue and a little bit awkward. And I panic inside.
I could see that. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's, you know, there are so many questions about the temple that people outside of our church have, and we always don't know how to answer them. And it can, yeah. I mean, you know, about garments, about, I mean, there's a whole list of, you know, why don't you let people in? Is it secret? You know, why is this?
Are you baptizing dead people?
Yeah.
Are you?
What? Corpses? What? I mean,
that seems very cult-esque that you're like not allowing people to see inside and you're doing these sacred rituals that you call sacred.
Yep. Yeah. But they're secret to us. We don't know what you're doing. And it's, you know, and how do you respond to someone who has a question about the temple like that? And you and I are in a unique position because in our stake, a temple is starting to be built, which is pretty, in fact, it's in your ward, if I'm correct. Yeah. Is that right?
It's actually not in our ward boundaries. It's in the neighboring ward boundaries, but it literally is across the street from our ward boundaries and within walking distance.
Yeah. You could walk there to the temple, pretty neat. And you have, I like it. Yeah. So Julie, why don't you take us through, because Julie and I have been involved in a stake level thing around this. Julie, much more, she kind of headed this whole thing up. So talk to us about this, Julie, and what this is like.
Okay, so this has been such a cool experience. So what I've been called to the State Communications Council. And a friend of mine was called as the social media specialist for the stake. And she and I kind of started talking a little bit about some of the things when we were brand new to the calling, some of the things that were on our mind. And I had something kind of pressing on me from literally the minute that I got this calling. And it had to do with something that we've mentioned on the podcast before, that sometimes when people ask us a question, if we feel insecure in any way, we go into like just mentally fight or flight mode, meaning that we either like verbally vomit all over the person because we're like, this is such a complicated question. There's so many things I want to say, but it's so special to me. Ah! And we panic a little bit like that. Or we're like, and kind of retreat from it. So that's what I mean by fight or flight. And this is, to give a specific reference, on Follow Him with Dr. Craig Manning, who is a sports psychologist. He talked about how you get out of that mode. And he said that the best way to get out of that mode is with truth and with knowledge. And it was interesting because as he talked about the fruits of that and being confident in what you know, you, instead of being more clear, that wasn't his focus, he said it actually prompts in you more humility. So the fruit of your clarity of thought is not that you can express it perfectly necessarily, but the fact that you internally feel calm, you feel confident, and you feel humble. And so what that opens up in you is this almost this receptivity to other people's perspectives. And you don't feel anxious to share your opinion or perspective. You don't feel like you need to shove it down anyone's throat. And you're not obsessing about how could I have said that more clearly? What should I have said? You know, or, oh crap, did I offend? And oh no, I need to sugarcoat and downplay because I'm not totally sure how I feel about this. Right. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
And so as we're getting ready for this temple, the thought that kept pressing on me is we need to help our stake to feel more confident, therefore humble, having conversations with their friends and family members even about the temple.
Because they're going to be asking more questions, right? This is going to be building up right in our neighborhoods. And they're going to say, so what is this and how does this work? And it's going to be a topic of conversation.
Right. Naturally, more so because of the fact that there's one that's going to be under construction, right?
Right. So
exactly. Okay. So then the other thought, do you want me to keep going for a second?
Keep going. Sorry. Yes.
Okay. So then the other thought that was kind of pressing on me, we've got in our calling, the way that they kind of do the training for Communications Council is they talk about you have an internal audience and an external audience. And your external audience is basically people who are not members of our church. And the internal audience is people who are members of the stake. And so thinking about both of those two audiences, we're talking about trying to create a connection between those two audiences. Well, one of the things that we also recognize is that when something is happening that has a lot of power, like when God's work is about to move forward, Satan gets a little antsy pants. And so, you know, thinking a little bit about, and this is one of my favorite scripture stories in the book of Revelation, where you've got the dragon, Satan, lying in wait to devour a man child that a woman is about to give birth to. And if everybody right now is just going, what the heck scriptures are you reading? It's book of Revelation symbolism. Just go with the story for a minute. Okay. So you've got this woman. This woman symbolically represents the church. And she's about to give birth to a man child. That man child symbolically represents Zion, or the fruit of what we're trying to create in the church, right? The purpose of the church is to help build a Zion people. Remember what Zion is, people who are of one heart, one mind, right? Like there's this purity, there's this unity that comes with Zion. And so then you see, you can picture the dragon, this fierce dragon, lying in wait for this woman to give birth because he just wants to go to the man child because the man child is the one thing against which he is rendered powerless, meaning Zion renders Satan powerless. Think about what the millennium will be like, right? We will have a Zion people and therefore Satan will be bound. And so this idea that if we can do something that renders Satan powerless in any way or decreases his power, the thing we ought to be focusing on is building unity as a stake. And so that was the other reason that we were investing in this event, is to create more unity among members of our stake. And we're talking unity in terms of like being collaborative and, you know, helping each other become more comfortable talking about the temple, and also ongoing opportunities to connect as a stake. And the purpose of this event was to do that, create more unity as a stake and create more opportunities to connect as we're asked questions and build confidence so that we do that without verbally vomiting all over people.
So there could have been one way to do this, Julie, as to say, okay, here are the questions that people may ask. Here are some good answers. Here is how you answer those questions. That was not done. That, I mean, it wasn't even close to that. It was, and that's what I think people would normally think of as, all right, right? Well, if we're going to be asked some weird questions, then how do we answer that, right? Instead of taking that route, you went a completely different way. And I think it was a better way than trying to help people answer the questions.
But that wasn't me. So let me tell you how that came about.
Okay.
And we'll describe what we did. So I just really felt strongly that we needed to have a council about the content. And so I called it a focus group, right? And Kevin was one of the people that I invited to be part of this focus group. And we tried to get people who didn't think alike, but that were really, you know, like-minded in terms of, you know, being able to unify around a purpose, but that had different background, different, you know, ways of thinking, et cetera. And so we had an attorney. Actually, we ended up with two attorneys, ironically, but one was female, one was male. We had Kevin, we had a couple of seminary teachers that are very different in terms of their personalities, and just really kind of tried to tap into how they thought we ought to do this. And so when we sat together, you remember that first focus group? Oh, wait, you weren't.
I wasn't there, but I was at the second one, right.
We debriefed you. So that first focus group, it was interesting because I presented, you know, this idea and said, we want to help people become more confident answering questions related to the temple and kind of how do you think we ought to do that? And it was so interesting because one of the things that two of these guys, the seminary teachers, they actually teach a Rooted in Christ class for our stake. And so they're very good at role plays. And they actually have said they hate role plays. They call them real plays instead. And so what they're trying to do, they said, we have to figure out how to help people practice so that they feel more comfortable actually having the words come out of their mouth without having it be fabricated. And they said, if you bring a list of questions, what you've brought is, you know, X percentage of all of the hypothetical questions that someone could be asked. And so what happens if someone asks a person a question outside of that list? Oh, they haven't practiced it. Dang it. What do I do? And so they're like, we have to get back to a principle that helps people respond to any question so that it isn't practicing for hypotheticals.
That's good. So really what you're doing in a way is you're using what I call the umbrella principle, where instead of focusing on the thing that needs help or the thing that needs fixed or whatever it is, we're focusing on a higher level principle that will take care of all that no matter what comes up. So that's exactly where we want to be, on that top level.
Exactly. And so the way that they came up with doing this, and this is, again, I'm telling you, it was so powerful. I believe in the power of councils and the synergy that can come from that. Because what they came up with is this idea that, well, first, we do need to help people do that. That would be great. But if the fruit of what we're trying to do is create more connection between us and the people that we're talking to, then we're not just going to be answering their questions. And one of the things that I feel very strongly about, and you know this because I've talked about it a ton, and this is part of what I brought to the table, is I felt like we needed to focus more on responding appropriately when they share their beliefs rather than being anxious about sharing our own beliefs. And that connection piece is where empathy comes in. So I'm like, we need to tie that in as well. And so we kind of started to flesh out how that might happen. And where we landed was on this three-part thing. So first, we wanted to actually practice answering some questions. So the first part was to answer questions. The second part goes to Kevin's area of expertise, which is to ask questions. So instead of focusing so much on what our answer is going to be and how we're going to perfectly articulate it, we want to focus instead on what can we do to shift the talking stick. We've talked about that before, right? Or to shift the sharing from us to them. And you can do that through a good question. And so we talk to people not just about how to answer questions, but how to ask questions when someone asks you a question.
Right.
Kind of a strange approach. People were like, it broke their brains. It did. And then the third part was about empathy. So it was answer, ask, and empathize. Those were the three skills that we focused on as part of this event.
And I'll tell you, as this little council, this focus group went through this, it was amazing. saying, okay, how do we do this? And okay, what do we do? You know, let's try this. And then we'd actually do it with us. We'd come up with an idea and we'd go through it and we'd go, yeah, that didn't work. What if we changed it this way and we try it again? And okay, that worked, but then we're going to have this problem because we're going to have a lot of people around us. It's not going to just be the small group. It's going to be a lot of people. So what, how do we do this? And, and we massaged it and the spirit was incredible. The ideas that came through, you know, during those meetings and even after and in between, as we would text back and forth ideas, it was quite an experience to be a part of, Julie.
It really was. And I felt like what was incredible to me is that I learned a lot about revelation through the process. And just the idea, because, you know, you kind of focus a lot on how you receive personal revelation, but it's really interesting to be a part of collectively receiving revelation. And part of what, you know, you have to be open to is that some of your ideas suck. And it has to be okay. And people are going to shoot it down. Yep. And then you also have to be receptive. Like, I came in with an idea in my head. And I'm telling you that I got this feeling from the spirit to just let everyone else talk. Right at the very beginning. Like, I knew it was going to come from the group. But it's really hard to let go of an idea. And I'm used to being the person, like, if I'm going to deliver content, I'm used to being the person that just plans out how that's going to go in the sequence, and I have a lot of control over it. But I felt like this wasn't, I mean, I didn't even know who's going to end up presenting the content. Like, it was absolutely something where we threw it all out and then created it together.
Yes.
Do you want to talk about the individual sections a little bit? Because I think there was a lot of power in that.
Yeah. Because that's in the end, that's kind of the meat of it. And that's what was so interesting about this whole thing is that as we went through and as we were prompted by the spirit to talk about different things and plan it, it didn't go the way we expected it to. And it turned out to be very different. And I think it was very effective because, like you said, it broke some brains. And I think it really needed to break some brains. It broke our brains at first as well. And we're like, actually, for us to do this right, we can't do what we've always been doing or what we thought we should always do. We need to do something completely different. Not that we need to do something different for different sake, but really, we want the outcome to be different. And so we have to be able to do and learn something different. And so that's really where these three things came from. And I'll tell you, when we did them, it was not comfortable. Breaking brains is not always comfortable. We've got, 300-400 people in there, and we broke people, and we made people uncomfortable. And again, that's not what we were trying to do, but
I know.
That wasn't our goal.
You love discomfort. It's like your favorite thing. You've already
It is.
Yeah. Okay, but there was a phrase that you used as we were counseling together that really stuck with me. And what you said was, we need to interrupt people.
Yes.
Like, we need to interrupt their habits. And that was really instructive to me because it's actually helped me a ton as we were kind of going through this to process that good things come from interrupting habits. If you want different results, you've got to do something differently. And so part of the goal is to interrupt your habits or your patterns, right?
Yes.
And so that's what you mean by break people's brains. You want to interrupt what your natural inclination is when it comes to, you know, this topic of answering questions.
And what we're fighting against, what this natural habit is, again, to reiterate, kind of, you said this earlier, was that when someone asks a question, we feel like, okay, we got to tell you everything about it and tell you how special it is, or we retreat and we're like, I don't have a clue of how to answer this. I feel so awkward, right? Those, I think, are the two biggest habits that we have when answering what seems to be awkward questions about the temple or the church overall. So how do we interrupt that? I love this. Let's talk about that.
Okay. Well, and I just have to add to what you just said really quickly, because I think it's a really valid point that we want to, like, when somebody asks us a question, that one of our habits is to really kind of just explain, answer the question, focus on saying it perfectly. That's kind of trained in us.
It is.
Like, not only is that how we converse with people, right? Like that's just natural conversation. You ask a question, I'm going to answer the question. I'm not going to dodge the question or you feel ignored. So that seems very appropriate. And we also are told to talk about our beliefs. And, you know, a question is like the perfect opportunity to be a missionary. And so that is really deep in our souls that we need to be member missionaries.
Right.
And also that is very appropriate. The problem is that we often go about it, and these habits often cause us to go about it in a way that creates disconnection instead of connection between you and the person that you're having a conversation with.
Okay. So you know where this leads us, Julie.
Where does it
lead? I want you, if you would be so kind as to be vulnerable here and share the story that you shared that night of when your friend asked about the temple.
Yeah. So literally I'm preparing for this. This is so humiliating. Preparing for this event. It's literally just a few days after this. And I went to go visit a friend who was injured. So I took her dinner and we sat there and we just started talking. And she said to me, you know, Julie, I'd love to go to the temple with you sometime because there are certain things that I struggle with. And I was so grateful to her for being vulnerable with me. And she's like, so I'd love to talk to you about it. And I'm like, oh, I would love that so much. And I proceeded to verbally vomit all over her with all of this information about the temple. And it was so interesting because the question, she even said to me, you know, sometimes I'll get asked a question, and she shared a specific question that she'd been asked by someone. And she said, I just kind of went, because it was something that I was uncomfortable with. She's like, I didn't know how to explain it because I was uncomfortable with it. Having to do with the temple.
Yeah.
And so I'm like, oh, I just felt for her and I just wanted to fix her problem. And so literally I did exactly what we taught people not to do.
Right.
And I just, bleh. And you know what stinks, Kevin? I really do feel like this was one of those moments where Heavenly Father allowed something to happen because it was so deeply instructive to me. I walked out the door. And I was like, she shut down. And I didn't see it until after. Actually, no, that's not true. I saw it while we were talking. And I said to myself, she's shutting down. And I proceeded to talk faster. Because there was limited
to get her attention more. Is that what it was?
Right. I'm like, let me rephrase that. Let me say that better. Let me say that in a way that we're going to feel more connected because I feel you disconnecting from what I'm saying right now. And I walked out at the end of that discussion. And I said, it was like so clear to me, this is why you're doing this event, because you who know better just did the exact wrong thing with the best of intentions. It was humiliating. Like I felt so embarrassed by that. I shared that with Todd and he just laughed his head off. He thought it was hilarious, right. But it reiterated to me just how humbling this is. And I guarantee you, I will do it differently next time because that was so deeply instructive to me. And I think everybody has to have some of those moments. Here's the deal. If you can bring it into your consciousness and recognize what you've done wrong, like I knew exactly what I had done wrong because we'd been studying about this.
Sure.
And planning for this event. But if you don't know what you did wrong, you just leave wondering if you did it right. And how could it have been? Like you just don't even know. So the fact that it became conscious to me and instructive, I now can choose to do it differently. Yeah. Where if it wasn't in my consciousness, I couldn't choose to do it differently.
I love that. And I think that's one of the things that we even mentioned was that after we do these things in this little event that we had, you're going to go out and you're probably going to do it wrong. And that's okay, because you will have the experience of doing it wrong and you will see how to do it this way. And I don't want to say this is the right way, right? But this will help you. And then you can see the difference. Because like you said, if we don't see the difference, we're not going to know if we did it right or wrong.
Yeah. Like the goal is to just notice it in yourself.
Yeah.
That's it. So the goal is not to do it perfectly every single time. The goal is to notice and start to gain a little bit more understanding and get better and better and better as time goes on. This is not something that you shift and automatically habitually do because you've just learned something new.
Wow, look at that. I can be better at it all of a sudden. Okay. No. Especially when you are breaking habits, when you are interrupting habits and patterns that you have had for so long, it's really easy for us to fall back into that, even though we know better and how to do it better, right? We so easily fall into that. So during this event, we purposefully help break patterns. Let's talk about how we did that.
Okay. So the first part of it, with answering questions, was really just an exercise in how could you collaboratively learn from each other how to come up with answers. And it's basically saying, here's a question that you think you should know the answer to. And then you're like, how do I say it out loud? And so we put people into round tables. Every table had a table leader, and we trained all of the table leaders ahead of time. Like, we brought them together. They watched training videos, and then we actually practiced, just like we did as a focus group. We practiced with the table leaders doing exactly what we were going to do that night. So these table leaders said, okay, they have a clipboard, they have paper in front of them. Every table was assigned a question. And there were basically, I think, 5 questions total. So each, you know, there were like 6 or 7 other tables that had the same question as your table. And they, as a group, came up with keywords that they think would need to be in that answer. And then the person who was the table leader would say, okay, you know, multiple people said this one, and they'd go through and kind of say, oh, I agree, that's super important. They put stars by the ones that were most important. And then someone would take a stab at articulating an answer, and they'd kind of flesh it out together. So that was an exercise that we're now encouraging people to do in their wards. And so on social media, we're periodically posting a question, and then hopefully everyone in the stake will be practicing that type of collaboration to come up with an answer to that question in their quorums and auxiliaries.
Right.
And so that's an ongoing, just here's a way to learn from each other and to feel like, oh, you know, this, oh, I love how you phrased that, etc. And so that was more just an exercise, super short. Now go and do more practicing in your wards. So that was the first part.
Okay.
Do you want to talk about the second part?
Okay. So with the second part, the ask questions, what we wanted to interrupt, as you said, Julie, was that when we're asked a question, we want to answer it. And it is so natural. Our brains, when we're asked a question, our brains automatically go to find an answer in our repository of knowledge and experience of, you know, what may I say, right? And we just automatically do that. So to help break it, what we first did is we played the question game. Now, let me explain the question game on a kind of a higher level, and then we're going to go back to this. And this is a game that we as a family love playing. We play this, you know, if we get a group together, it's not unusual for us to say, hey, let's play the question game. And we can do this for an hour plus and have a great time. So the way it works, yes, the question game, everyone sits in a circle. So you have to be able to see everyone and look at every person in the eye who's in the circle. And there is a king of the circle, and to the left of that king is the dunce of the circle. And what's going to happen is the king will start off the round by asking someone, looking at them straight in the eye and asking them a question. The next person turns to someone else, or maybe the same person, but usually someone else, and asks them another question. The question does not need to be in context. It does not need to match or fit in with the question before. It is any question at all. And that may sound like, oh, this is really dumb. Actually, it's not. It's a lot of fun. Here's the thing, though. There are a few more rules. You cannot answer the question. If someone says, how was your day? You can't say, it was great. How about yours? You just answer the question. It can only be a question. You can't repeat a question, and you can't take too long before answering the question. It has to be just another question. And so you do that, and you go back and forth and back and forth and back and forth until someone breaks down and they're like, I don't know. Or they answer it accidentally because that's what we're used to. And they do that. And then what happens is that that person gets up, everyone rotates to take their place, and that person goes to the dunce spot. And then what you're trying to do is get the king out so that you can take their the king spot and get up to that. What we found in doing this, because we've done this so many times, is that when new people come to play, they are not used to not answering. And so it's really difficult to be asked a question and just give another question. So they will either hesitate, like, and they're thinking, okay, I can't answer this. I that's right. I can't answer this. I've got to ask another question. And by then it's too late, right? It's got to be another, or they will answer it and then ask another question and not even realize they did it. We'll have to say, stop. You answered the question. They're like, no, I said, oh, that is answering a question. You're right. I'm the dunce. And they go sit in the dunce seat. But it's actually a lot of fun. And so we did a version of that where the table leader asked
like
a question
the one that they had been, they had been answering just earlier.
Right. That question that they were just given earlier for the answer piece before that. And so they looked at someone and said, all right, here's the question. Da-da-da-da. And then that person was supposed to turn and look at another person and ask another question. Typically, they were on topic. And we weren't rotating around and doing the dunce seat and everything. It was just a few minutes of, let's get used to, when we're asked a question, asking another question. And that's the pattern that we wanted to interrupt right there, is asking the question. And sometimes it went well. Sometimes they're like, oh, I don't. I know. Okay, what do I say? Any question? I mean, obviously it was a temple question and people would throw out temple questions, but I watched because I was a table leader. People would stop and be like, I don't have another temple question. I don't know. So they would turn and say, how was the hot dog you ate today? Or something like that, right?
Yeah. Right.
And that was okay. Anything. Right. Anything. Yeah. The purpose was not to come up with a perfect next question. It was just to interrupt our habit.
Mm-hmm. The thing about interrupting your habit that's so important is it's not that we were in any way suggesting that somebody asks you a question and then you dodge the question by asking them a question. No. Instead, it was to think differently. Right. So anyway, keep going. Sorry.
So because of that though, no, I'm glad you added that. Because of that, you talked about the shared pool of meaning in kind of the debrief as we in between these little exercises. And what we were really trying to get at is shifting from answering the question to making sure that in the discussion that you have with them, that it is a discussion, right? And it isn't just a verbal vomit, which, can come so easily, right? That it becomes, instead of, okay, here is my feelings, my thoughts on it, you want to have them be a part of the conversation. So what you're trying to do at the same time is trying to help them be a part of it, not just you and answering, but for example, if someone says, what are these big buildings you're building? And you may say, well, obviously you've seen, which temples have you seen? Because there are many out there. Which ones have you seen? Right? And that way you're getting their understanding and they are contributing to the conversation as well. And when you do that, you're connecting with them. And so what we're really trying to go for is, how do you connect with that person? You may not have the best answer, and that's okay. But did you connect with them? And that is much more lasting than the answer will ever be.
Right. Like a perfectly articulated answer that doesn't address a person's need is not, or that goes right over their head, or that doesn't, and like when we miss the mark and we just share an answer, we have no idea where the question came from. Versus if we ask a couple of questions to understand that, then we can cater our answer to really hit whatever the need is that they have, or really get at what prompted the question. You know, so for example, with my friend where I botched it, I assumed that she understood certain things about like the Old Testament, for example. And so I went back to relating it to the Old Testament, da 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 da. And when I finally got around to asking her a question, she's like, I have no idea what you're talking about. And I was like,
oh, whoops.
Yeah. And so that's part of it, is that we just don't know. And so one of the best ways for us to help somebody feel like, hey, I value where you are. I value your beliefs and what you have to add to this, is to ask them a question. And so even like the briefest answer earns you the right to ask a question in response. You know, even sometimes instead of just answering, I'll be like, well, tell me where that question came from, just to get a gauge of like, you see something, did somebody say something to you? Did you watch something on TV? What about the internet? You know, maybe like we've had a lot of stuff in the media. And so maybe it was something that they read in the media, and just understanding where that was coming from.
For example, if someone asked the question, why can't anyone go into the temple? I mean, your churches, anyone can go into the temple, but why can't anyone just go into the temple? It would be really interesting to find out why the person is asking that question, because maybe they're just asking the question and they had never thought of that before, you know? Yeah. Or maybe they had a son or a daughter who went through the temple, but they're not a member, and they weren't able to go. And it's a very personal thing for them. And they're a little bit not excited about what happened and why they were kicked out of the wedding in a sense, right? Mm-hmm. So they may have a very deep emotional interest in a question. And if we just answer the question, then we won't hit that. We won't connect with them and have them add to the discussion as well. And they'll walk away going, yeah, got nothing out of that.
Take your example. And it's somebody whose son or daughter went through the temple, or, you know, even got married and they couldn't go in or whatever, and they don't totally understand it. And instead of talking about that, because you know not why they've asked this question, instead you start talking about like a code of conduct, how we want to, well, you know, we'd like to prepare ourselves spiritually, and so we want to be living a certain way, and we and you start talking about that. And so you've not only missed the mark completely, but you shamed them.
You made it worse.
In the process of giving this answer, and made it worse. And so that's what I'm talking about, is this idea that it's what you said. You create more connection by taking an interest, a genuine interest in that person. And so the interruption, playing the questions game, is to just interrupt your brain enough to get curious. So instead of just being like, how will I articulate this? I must prepare my reply. We're like, why do I think they said that? Where are they coming from? And your brain is focused less on your perspective and more on, hey, I want to figure out what their perspective is.
Yes.
And it interrupts the habit.
Yeah. It was good. And then, you know, we didn't have a lot of time to do all of this. We went through a number of exercises to help them break that pattern overall, or interrupt the pattern. But I really hope people walked away from each of these thinking, okay, maybe I need to do that a little bit more. Maybe I need to interrupt that pattern. And as long as they recognize it, and I think that's the biggest thing, is that they recognize that we have a pattern that we need to break. All right, now I can focus on how to interrupt the pattern for me, because the way I'm going to interrupt the pattern is very different than how you're going to do it, Julie.
Well, and to be super clear, what we did for the exercise is we did the questions game and said, okay, now that your brain is broken, let's brainstorm questions that you might ask someone. And took that initial question that they were given and said, okay, here is your question. And, you know, one of the questions is, you know, what do you do inside the temple? So they'd worked on an answer to that question, and then they'd broken their brains by playing the questions game. And then we said, okay, take the question again and don't give me an answer. Tell me a question that you might ask a person related to this question of, they've asked you, what do you do inside the temple? So what's a question that you might ask them? And so they brainstormed those types of questions. Well, you know, have you ever visited a temple? Did you go to the visitor center? Did, you know, they show you any information?
I mean,
and they brainstormed as tables what questions they might ask in response if they were asked that specific question.
Yeah. It's a good exercise. I like that.
It was.
Yeah.
Part three.
Number three.
Okay. I'll take this if you don't mind.
Yes, please do.
The third part was then, okay, So now somebody gives you an answer. Let's say you ask them some questions and then you genuinely ask them a more introspective question. Well, now your job is not to agree, disagree, probe for more information, counsel, give them advice, try and fix the problem that they just brought up to you. None of that. Your job is to empathize. Your job is to try and see it from their perspective. And so the idea is that if somebody shares something with you, anything that you know is attached with some kind of an emotion, you have the responsibility to treat that appropriately. And if you just move on and ask them another question, or if you just breeze past it and start talking about your own story, then you will miss the mark with that person. And I shared, you know, a little bit about my son who has special needs and how disconnected I used to feel from the community of other moms who had autism, kids with autism. And the reason that I felt so disconnected is because almost every single time a mom would find out that I had a kid with autism, they would talk to me about their kid with autism. And they were trying to connect with me by relating, and I felt so disconnected. And part of it was that they would give me advice as to what worked for them. And they would really think that they were doing me this service by sharing their experience, but they rarely would ask me questions about my experience. And my son, I found out later, did not just have autism. He had this genetic disorder. So I was like, you're not even describing anything that is remotely relatable to me. And it was because Matt, his primary diagnosis was not autism, but that's all we knew at the time. And so that feeling that like just bleh that I would get, I really have this kind of strong emotion around the idea that we really need to, when someone shares something with us, we want to invest in their perspective instead of being so anxious to share our own or so mired that we stay in our own. And so we talked about the skills related to empathy, and we talked about what's different, you know, between attentive listening versus empathic listening, and how you can show a person that you're trying to take their perspective rather than staying in your own perspective. And so for that training, because we didn't necessarily know if people would struggle personally to answer a question about the temple, and we wanted it to be real, we picked a question that everyone would have a real answer to. And then we taught them talking stick communication. And we've taught talking stick communication on the podcast before, so I won't go into all of the details. But the idea was that every table leader would bring what they called a talking stick, and they had a prop. Everyone had their own prop. And they would, as a table, the table leader would ask a question, and this was a real play question. And the question was, what is difficult for you, or what concerns you most about answering questions that people have about the temple? And everybody was there because they were worried about it. Like, that's why they were motivated to come to the event, is they're like, I worry about, and then they would have some kind of an answer, we hoped. And boy, did they.
Yes.
And so the table leader would ask the question and then hand the talking stick to that person. And then everyone else at that table would practice the skills we had taught related to empathy. So the primary things that they were doing were repeating back what they heard the person say, or rephrasing the content, and reflecting the feeling, so that the person who shared, you know, if they said something about, for example, you know, how they felt themselves get anxious when people asked them questions, and it felt like they kind of went brain dead. And so they were so nervous. Well, people at the table were going to be like, wow, you feel like your brain shuts down. You get really nervous, and repeat it back. And then oftentimes the person holding the talking stick would be like, yes. And the problem is that I just love the temple so much, and I want so badly to be able to say it. So they would repeat it back. You love the temple so much. You want so badly to be able to say, you know, say exactly how you feel and have it land appropriately. Yes. And then they'd keep sharing. And so what you saw was that by empathizing, people share more and more, and you get deeper and deeper. Whereas if you had asked them another question, that would have interrupted their emotion, and then they would have gone, oh, pivot, answer your question. Because what? Everybody has the habit of ask a question, answer a question. Right. So they would, as we habitually do, go, oh, okay, pivot, now I'll answer your question. And you have just yanked the talking stick out of my hands by asking that question. Versus empathize, share more. empathize, share more. And so they did that exercise. And when the person's like, yeah, I feel understood, they would pass the talking to stick to someone else. And we'd ask that person the question, hey, what concerns you most about answering questions that people ask you about the temple? And that person would be like, well, sometimes I, and start sharing their feelings. And so that was what we did for the empathy exercise at the tables. And that was the part like that took the most training with the table leaders.
Yeah.
Is to say, you need to know what the no-nos are and what is appropriate so that you can coach people, because they will make mistakes, how to stay in empathy instead of going back to our habit of like asking more questions. So if someone asked a question, they'd be like, nope.
Yep.
And they, oh crud, I just asked a question. Let's rephrase. And the people at the table tried to basically earn the talking stick by helping whoever was holding it to feel completely understood.
Right. And we, and I found being a table leader that when practicing for this for the first time and you're trying to be empathetic, you're hitting the list of don'ts, like giving advice or something like that. And I'd have to go, stop, hold on. Yep. What did you just do there? Did that sound like giving advice? Oh, you're right. It was. Okay. Let me back up. And then remember, you're rephrasing. Okay. So rephrase or just say it back to them. Right. And it takes a little bit of skill, a little bit of practice. Well, maybe a lot to do this. Yeah. I mean, I remember the first time we did this, you and I, on an episode and how awkward I was. I think I've buried that episode. It is not visible to anyone anymore.
Oh my gosh, that's so funny.
Yeah, but it's not an easy thing to do. But when we do it, that's right. They get to be a part of this discussion, and we get to understand where they're coming from, their perspective.
Yeah.
If we're launching in on answers, we don't know their perspective. We can most likely completely miss the boat.
Well, and then when they share any kind of feeling with us, we want them to feel safe doing that in the future. And so the skill of empathy helps them to be like, wow, you genuinely care, not just about trying to convert me to your religion, but you genuinely care about me.
Yeah.
And that's literally what we are trying to show other people. We're trying to show other people the love of Jesus Christ by loving people as he would. Like, literally, if you think about it, the most connecting thing that we could possibly do is to invest in other people. That is literally, I mean, everything in the gospel has to do with the individual, right? In terms of, I value you. I don't just value you because you're connected to all these people or part of this group or a member of such and such religion.
Right.
I value you. And so that's what we need to model in the way that we react and respond to people when they share anything. And even if we profoundly disagree with it, like they can share something with us and it can be so far from what we believe, instead of being like, well, we see it differently. No, it doesn't mean you agree with it because you repeat it back to them. Invest in it. Show that you heard every word. Show that you are hanging on to it because you care. It has value to you because it's important to them.
Yes. And sometimes what I found is that when you do that, when people finally, because we have these thoughts in our heads, right? We have this picture, the story written of what things are, and but we never verbalize it. And so if we verbalize it, we realize, oh, that's actually not what I meant. So what I've found sometimes is that when we empathize with someone and they say, okay, well, oh, this person is interested, and they start telling us what they really feel, they will say it and then realize, no, that doesn't make sense either. Or that's not really how I feel. And they start getting clarity from their own answers, and they start changing their own answers, which is great because they're working through it, and that's all right. Sometimes it's a working through session, right? But we get to the more core feelings and the more core understandings of what of their experience rather than just our experience thrown out at them.
Exactly. Like it is, you find places that you connect by letting them process through what they actually feel, right? Like right. I can tell you, and I think I've said this before, it's so funny. I even have a visual, like it was up on my stairs and my son was telling me something. It was so ludicrous. It was so stupid. And I was just like, I can't even believe that we're having this conversation. And I just was like, go to empathy. And I just repeated it back. And he's like, that really sounds dumb, doesn't it? And I'm like, why? Yes, it does. No, I didn't say that out loud. I was like,
so you feel that it's dumb.
Yeah. So you think this is dumb. Yeah, exactly. And he kept sharing and he kind of reframed what he felt while he was standing there. And like, I always say that I feel like a testimony is the answer to an introspective question expressed, right? But how often do we struggle to say how we really feel? Mm-hmm. Well, when someone is sharing their feelings with us, it's the same deal. Maybe this is the first time they've ever talked about their belief in a divine being. And maybe it's the first time it's not part of their family. It's the first time it's ever come out of their mouth before. Yeah. So even as they say it, they're like, okay, that doesn't sound like I wanted it to sound. I don't think that's actually how I feel. And they're trying to figure out, because in our head, it can be clear, but when we articulate it, it's not. And so we've got to give people that space, and empathy creates that space for someone to kind of really process through.
And the safety, as you mentioned, and the safety to be able to do that. Because if they're doing that in front of you, they have to feel safe, or they won't do it. They'll just shut down right there. But you help them feel safe. And then next time when they have another question, they know where they felt safe and they can turn to you again.
Totally. That is the goal. And you know, what was so interesting as we were preparing for this, I was wrestling because I was the person that kind of moderated, right? And I was wrestling with, how do I wrap this up? And it was so amazing to have the word hesed just keep coming to my mind. Because we framed this whole thing around the idea of our goal is to connect, not convert. And I should have shared this at the very beginning when we first started talking, but the definition of connection that we used is to help, like helping people feel seen, heard, and valued. Like when you feel seen, heard, and valued, you feel connected. And so that was the definition that we were working from. That's a Brené Brown definition. And as we got to the end, I started to realize, gosh, this has everything to do with our covenants. Like we talk about covenantal connection. Right? I'm like, so what does that mean? Covenantal connection. So if we're talking about connection in terms of feeling seen, heard, and valued, we're talking about a relationship in which we feel seen, heard, and valued by God, and vice versa. We show our Heavenly Father and our Savior that we see, hear, and value them, which obviously they don't need that the same way that we do. And yet that's what covenantal connection is about. Hesed is a two-way thing. And hesed is that Hebrew word that President Nelson used when he was talking about covenants that describes the kind of loyalty and the type of relationship that we have with our Heavenly Father when we enter a covenantal relationship with him. And he said there's no English translation that does it justice, but he tried to kind of describe what it was. And I'm like, that's what it is. And so what we, in order to live our covenant more fully, which is a vertical connection, right? We need to be connecting horizontally with people, because a lot of the covenants that we make with Heavenly Father are relational covenants. They have to do with relationships. And so in order for us to more fully live our vertical covenants, and deepen that connection, we need to simultaneously be focused on deepening our connections horizontally. And so that was how we wrapped it up. And it was so clear to me, and I've thought about it a lot since. And I feel like what it's causing me to do is to recognize the value of being truly present with other people. and being truly invested in what they have to say instead of making judgments about it, or instead of trying to filter it through something that makes me feel more comfortable. Because oftentimes these conversations that we have with people when we're exploring their beliefs, it can cause us a little bit of discomfort because it's outside of what we, like, we feel so strongly and so comfortable with what it is that we know about the gospel of Jesus Christ that we sometimes forget that other people also believe in the gospel of Jesus Christ and they just see it a little bit differently, but that has value too.
Yeah.
And it doesn't in any way devalue what it is that we hold near and dear. Instead, it helps to expand our understanding. And so that perspective about this is part of me trying to keep my covenants more fully has helped me to feel more motivated to dig into the discomfort and to be okay with it. Right. Yeah.
Yep. I love your explanation of the covenantal connection vertically and horizontally, and had never even thought about it that way, but you're right. For us to really connect with our Father in heaven and with Jesus Christ, we need the horizontal connection. And that is really what we were trying to do in this whole event, is to, how do we deepen that horizontal connection with the people who ask us questions?
Yeah.
That is the most important thing.
Exactly. And that's, like, the thing is that we forget. It's not just, we don't just talk about it. Like, a lot of things, I think, with the gospel, we just talk about and then we have to interpret it and figure out how to apply it in our own lives. So we actually, like, this is one of the few times where I think that we actually got at skills. Like, there are trainable skills that go into living our covenants better, which sounds a little bit like, I don't want to minimize that at all. But I think that there was value, at least I hope that there was value to digging into some of that and really trying to practice. Like, we can practice being better people. We can practice, you know, breaking our own brains. Isn't that what repentance is? Repentance is changing your mind.
Change.
Yep. So that's like breaking your brain. Let's give it that word. So if we're supposed to do daily repentance, we should be breaking our brain daily.
Oh, I'm all for that. I'm all for breaking brains. So really, in a way, the best, well, what we have found, and I don't want to say the best, but I'll say the best way for us that we have found to answer questions is to create a connection with others. And it doesn't seem like, you know, from the outside or someone just having not heard this conversation, you would think, okay, I ask a question. How am I going to answer that? Well, that's actually not the purpose. What do you mean that's not the purpose? They asked a question. Aren't you supposed to answer it? Well, yeah, you are. But at the same time, what's even more important than that? Well, what could be more important than answering the question? Maybe connecting with them. And at the same time, we're helping them keep their covenants. Now, when we talk about, you know, you got to keep your covenants, right? Yeah, you got to keep your covenants. You made a covenant. You got to keep it. Well, how? I don't know. And I think this was a good example of one way to keep your covenants. So vertical, horizontal, so you can do that. And I love that perspective.
You know, I think that one of the things that is really cool about all of this as well is that hopefully people, I mean, I don't know about you, but like, even as you're saying that, there's a lot of depth to what it was that we were trying to do, right?
Yes.
Connect it back to covenants. There was a lot of depth. But I also hope that there was a sense of relief that people had, because I think that it is so difficult to perfectly answer people's questions. And that's a lot of pressure to expect yourself to be able to have the right words on the fly to a question that you've never given any thought before. That's a lot of pressure.
Right.
And so that pressure goes away because it is very easy and very natural to instead just be curious and just take an interest in someone else. And it was funny because even as we were practicing empathy, people would sit there and be like, how do I empathize? I don't know what to say. And I'm like, don't think so hard. Just repeat back what they said. Like, you don't have to come up with something to say because they just said it. Literally say it back. So there's no pressure. Like, the only thing you're trying to do is focus on them. And that means they're spoon feeding you what should come out of your mouth next.
Yes.
And so hopefully some of this was a little bit relieving because it's not.
Yeah. Could you imagine if we did this a little bit differently? Well, maybe a lot bit differently and said, all right, here's a question. Here are some ways to answer it. Brother so-and-so, would you answer this question? And they, blah, da, 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 right? And they answer the question with all of their great knowledge. And then, well, actually, okay, sister so-and-so, will you do it in your way? No, here's, and what that would almost do, I think, is have everyone else go, that was a great question. I could never do that. I'm even more intimidated now than I was before the whole thing. And I think you're right. What this did is make it so that you're sitting around a table with 10, 12 other people and we're all struggling and we're all knowing, okay, I'm not in this alone and that's okay. Right. We've got a ways to go, but you know, I am who I am and I'm going to try to be better in all of this, but I don't feel completely intimidated now. I have some skills that I know I can go and use. And it doesn't have to be the right answer every time because I don't know that. Trying to understand that, have the right answer every time is pretty much impossible. So,
yeah, and the call.
Go ahead.
Sorry. I was just going to say the call isn't to be like brother or sister so and so with this. The call is to be yourself.
Yeah.
Like it's, and that's the beauty of it. Like that comes naturally to all of us, right?
Hopefully it does. That's what we want. We want ourselves, right? Because who are we? We are children of God who have made covenants with him. And he, because of that, he gives us strength and power that we can share with others. We want to be ourselves. We don't want to be everyone else or that perfect whatever, right? To have more knowledge and to be able to answer questions better on a black and white level, there's nothing wrong with that. I think that's great as well, right? And a lot of the study I do is, in fact, the way I study my scriptures, and I mentioned this before, a lot of the times it's, okay, here's a principle. How would I explain this to someone not of our church? In fact, right now, I'm in Alma 12, and it talks about Adam and Eve partaking of the fruit. So I'm on this kick right now of trying to understand original sin. And how other churches believe what original sin is compared to what we believe. And can I articulate that to myself, let alone to someone else, right? But do I understand that difference? So that's a lot of how I study the scriptures. However, I'll tell you, I've come up with the best answers, I think, ever on so many topics, but I never use them. Right. I mean, people ask me questions and that's not where I go to answer the questions. Let me give it to you. I've studied this. I know what this is.
Right.
It's that connection in the end.
Yeah.
Is what we need to remember.
Agreed.
Okay. So last thoughts, Julie, about either this event or what we hopefully accomplished or what you hope people would take away from it.
I hope that people like, so first of all, it was a really humbling experience. Like it was a really cool thing to be involved in and a really spiritual experience for me personally. Okay. And as I think about it, the principle has to do with connection. And I feel like all of us struggle to do that. And so one of the, like I shared at the very beginning of the event and I shared that, you know, stupid story about my dumb, but it really has humbled me because I can study this all day. Like I can love the principles of empathy and blah, blah, blah with all my heart and soul. And then I can still botch it so badly. And so I really do hope and sincerely pray that this is something we will just take a one natural step to try and do better. And it's going to play out differently for different people. But if we can recognize in ourselves the things that we are doing to build connection versus distance ourselves from other people, the ways that we're helping them to feel seen, heard, and valued, then we're doing better. Yeah. We're doing it right. It may not look perfect, but we're doing it right.
Yeah. It'll take some
time. So I hope it's encouraging.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. We want people to leave with hope that, okay, this is possible. We can do this. Good. I don't feel so alone in trying to answer questions, or, you know, whether it's about the temple or whether about the church or whatever it is, I have some place to go to practice or to become better over time.
Right.
Don't worry about it being right now. Yeah.
Exactly.
Thank you. Thank you, Julie. Awesome. This was such a great experience. Loved it. Thanks for letting me be a part of it too. It was wonderful.
Oh my gosh, I love it. It was so fun. We had a good time.
All right, thanks everyone. If you would, share this episode with people, with the people around you, right? I think this is a great episode, not only just for teachers, but for everyone who is trying to really understand how would I answer some, maybe some difficult questions. I think this might be good for pretty much every member of the church. Thanks for listening, everybody. Take care. Bye.
Bye.